You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm so excited because the first book by Darkness Prevails and Carmen Carrion is available for pre-order right now. It's the Freaky Folklore Compendium, filled with the history and lore of the most terrifying folklore monsters across the globe, alongside some cool but creepy illustrations. Releases July 16th. Pre-order now at eeriecast.com/freak or on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and your favorite bookstore.
Beware the Redwood Bureau, a secret organization which captures and researches creatures and objects that defy explanation. Their reckless procedures have led to countless innocent lives lost. I am Agent Conroy. I worked for the Redwood Bureau, but I have escaped them to leak their reports to the unsuspecting public. You have the right to know.
Deep within a Redwood Bureau facility lies one of their most sinister secrets, the Doldrums, a chilling example of the organization's horrific depravity. This labyrinthine prison, once a closely guarded secret, has now been compromised by the initial collapse of one of its sections. The destruction has not only released the horrors within from containment, but also reveals the lengths to which the Bureau will go to maintain secrecy and control. The Doldrums were initially formed as a preventative measure for any would-be informants or dissidents standing against or within the Bureau's ranks. However, as the complex was modified by necessity and filled to bursting with otherworldly horrors, it became clear that the Bureau's ambition had outgrown their ability to contain them. They realized they'd need to source out a new location. In the meantime, what was brought to this facility couldn't be moved. Instead, additions were made. The earth beneath it was hollowed out, and construction of the true Doldrums began. Whispers proceeded of a place where those who dared to question the Bureau's actions or got in their way would disappear, never to be seen again. This file bears significance to me, as I will be subject to a similar fate if I am ever found and captured. It also acts as another piece of evidence that proves the Bureau's willingness to murder and torture human beings. The Doldrums are a place where morality has diminished in favor of grim fascination and grisly interests. The Bureau satisfies basic, inhumane curiosity with many degrees of separation from experiments, scientists, and prisoners. As their presence remains, the Doldrums act as a cruel reminder that our benevolent protectors learn their methods through malicious means. Outliers create chaos and are not tolerated by the Bureau. The Doldrums are one of the facilities that stand to correct those outliers, to place them back in line, and encourage uniform behavior. Once placed within, the unlucky souls are at the complete mercy of those in charge. Despite their best efforts to create a place where anything goes in and nothing comes out, the Bureau has made a dire error in their structure. One of the Doldrums fell, and its destruction marks yet another moment in their history that will be wiped from memory if they have their way. A moment that proves their ability to predict is immutable, yet their ability to prevent is questionable at best. To protect the world, they required the greatest prison, a place where those things we don't know can be kept. As we require discussion, protection, and research of things beyond our understanding, we are only shown an immense level of disregard. Initially presented as one of the first great moments among the anomalous, a site where all could be kept, and all would be safe. As all great things do, this facility faces collapse. Amidst the chaos, a lone victim attempts to escape his fate, and instead of assuming the role of a rat in a cage, he now occupies the position of being a rat in a maze. Multiple high-threat anomalies have broken containment, and their fervor rocks the shaky supports that hold the complex. In the aftermath, a nascent opportunity for escape has occurred. With the guidance of one who might know this place, the rat will attempt its escape.
Deborah Matilda Fitch.
She informed me as we passed through a dim section.
What?
I ask.
That's my name. What's yours?
She asks.
Devin.
I claim.
Devin Mildebrandt.
This attempt to mask my identity worked out just fine, and Deb casually accepts it. She moved with confidence. Her words were spoken with impunity.
Where are we?
I wonder aloud.
Section 12P. We're deep underground,
she informs me.
As a prisoner, you're close to home, or at least close to where you woke up.
Her face jerked to the side to look at me, eyes wide with momentary bewilderment.
How the hell did you get out?
I was brought to a room. I found a door and walked through. Then I was in an office and the lights went red.
I remembered through the haze, still clouding my thoughts.
I was lost for a while. Someone tried to kill me. Something killed him.
My recollection begins to fade, something which Deborah picks up on.
Slow down, bud. You don't want to stress yourself right now. We're deep inside an increasingly hostile and malfunctioning facility, trapped far underground with a ton of escaped entities.
Her blunt mannerism was a little striking.
Our goal is to find a way out and bring anyone we can find still alive.
This matter-of-fact speaking was both discouraging and encouraging. Our footsteps resonated off the dark walls, narrow passages that move between the major hallways. Deb's clothes hinted at her profession, strapped to the gills with various means of exercising brute force. All I had was my flashlight, so walking with her made me feel a bit more secure. A young face, toned body, curly dark hair. She lacked a helmet like the other security guards. Our so far calm stroll was interrupted by a mild tremor, its power matched by a ferocious, deafening noise. A moment of stillness followed by a tremendous clamor as metal sounds erupted from a distant place. When things finally calmed down, she looked at me and asked if I was all right.
What was that?
I ask.
It sounded like another section collapsed. We need to move!
She insists, while tugging me along the walkway. I managed to choke out another question.
What do you mean it collapsed? Isn't all this built into the ground?
It's not like an anthill, more like a ladder,
she said.
Think of each section as a box that's suspended above another box by ropes. When the ropes break, the boxes fall on top of one another. Which breaks more ropes, which causes more boxes to fall?
Her explanation and our hurried sprinting were stopped by the loudest slam I've ever heard.
Sounds like the one above us might be breaking.
What do we do?
I cry out in panic.
Jesus, is this 20 questions? Just run!
She demanded, while gesturing down a particular passage. More crashing. The concrete walls begin to crack as I spot a bridge to another segment. As we passed over, the area we ran from began falling, taking the bridge with it. I leap desperately, adrenaline surging through my limbs, and barely make it to the other side. Deborah misses the edge. She begins sliding down the angled bridge into the cataclysmic innards of the collapsing facility. Below were mountains of rubble. Strange things moved in the shadows of my peripheral vision, while the previous section detached from its ties, falling as if in slow motion, only to land with similar force to that of a bomb. Its square exterior fell to pieces as all manner of steel and concrete innards came pouring out. Amidst the chaos, my hand managed to snatch the arm of Deborah, holding her in one hand and a nearby pole in another. I struggle to lift her from the wrecked bridge, but finally got her up as she thanks me for the save. She turned and began walking into the new section. I gazed down at the crevasse below. More things were down there moving about. Their fast-moving dark shapes rushed by and melted back into the shadows. Probably creatures that were imprisoned and experimented on within this complex. Now released by the crumbling structure and free to do as they please. A suspended ladder of prison sections that acted as the core of the complex had just lost the spine from its body. As I looked down, figures shifted through the pieces, shouts and voices echoing all the way up to me, matched by roars, growls, and swift, silencing movements. For a moment, I looked at a humanoid figure, perhaps a prisoner, who seemed to be gazing up at me. I thought about how things must look from down there. The sounds and the horror below made the terror and nightmares up here seem far more forgiving. I accepted that crevasse as being a new portal to hell. Now our strides were filled with silence, a grim anticipation that everything could fall apart at any moment. Even Deborah couldn't stave off the permeating dread. We were simply too on edge to banter. Instead, I thought about this place and the situation at hand. If you had Pandora's box in your possession, why would you suspend it? Why risk putting all this otherworldly hostility in something that's so fragile? It's like trapping a demon in a glass bulb, only to dangle it on top of your Christmas tree. To that end, I cannot fathom a single good reason to do this. Instead of pondering, I ask the woman who knows more about this place.
Why was this facility constructed this way?
You love asking questions like, is it your thing? Do you just like to ask questions? Or are you genuinely confused?
Her snide comments didn't sit well with me.
I'm so sorry, I can't quite grasp this oh-so-common situation. Pardon me for not knowing Doldrum's etiquette, nor being mentally prepared to deal with watching someone be gored. It's almost like I was drugged and forcefully dragged into some bullshit far beyond anything I've ever seen. And just because someone else is jaded enough to think it's normal, doesn't mean everyone has a tolerance for this shit.
I halted. Deb looked at me with a slightly pompous expression, then said,
"It's because some of the things around here, like physical contact, if you have one of these things in a glass jar on a table, it can move through both to wind up under the table. By transitive property, it could appear underneath the room the table is sitting in. Thus, keep everything 5 feet apart."
She spoke fluently and confidently.
"You seem stressed. How long have you been here?"
I don't know. A few days, maybe,"
I answer. She nods.
"We'll get you something to eat once we find a safer place. The ladder is hooked into segments that are built into the stone. If we get into that part of the facility, we'll have no worries of collapsing into the lower levels."
She smiles, seeming to be completely unaffected by my mild tantrum. We continued our walk until eventually finding a clue as to our whereabouts on a wall.
A10.
She reads aloud.
Nice. We're only one section away from the walls. Once we're there, we'll be out on the ladder and hopefully out of harm's way.
I was still struggling to grasp the construction of this place, but it didn't seem to matter. I had someone who knew their way through. Yet, some things stood out to me. It's not like these segments are constructed out of light material. The floors and walls are concrete. Yet, somehow these concrete boxes could not only contain threats, but remain unbothered for presumably long periods of time.
What caused the fall?
I ask, to receive an immediate sigh.
What caused all of this? Well, we don't know. Something snapped near the top. While repairs were being done, something got out of containment. Things kept snowballing from there, and we lost control.
She said. Maybe an honest recollection of events.
Now, no more questions out of you. Why are you so damn curious?
Oh, my mistake. I forgot to read the pamphlet they gave me when I was brought here against my will.
I responded sarcastically. She groans, but we continue on. At a crossroad, she looked around, identifying the path we needed to take, and we start in that direction. However, in the middle of a bleak-looking, empty hallway, Deborah shot her arm out in front of me and blurted,
"Whoa!"
I looked ahead, then back at her, then back ahead. There was nothing. A small strip of ripped paper that appeared to be loose trash, a few marks on the wall, and a whole lot of nothing else.
"What?"
I ask, with genuine confusion. She didn't answer. Her eyes were fixated ahead, watching nothing like a hawk.
"What are you doing?"
I ask again.
"Shh,"
she interrupts. A few moments of silence pass. I stare ahead, then look at her once more.
"Don't shush me,"
I said.
"What's the big deal?"
With no answer, I simply pushed my way by her and started walking forward. I heard her gasp just as something shifted. My vision was scored. Lines melded across my eyes as they danced and waved. Before long, I was ripped away by Deb, who grabbed me and practically threw my body backwards.
"Are you out of your mind?"
she yells.
"There is something!"
She got me to my feet. My hands trembled as my muscles twitched and spasmed.
What was that?"
I mumble out.
"It's just a field. We can't pass through here. Now calm down,"
she instructs.
"You walked right into it. That could have shut down your nervous system or turned your heart off."
As she delivered this information, I was panting, gasping for air.
"Probably got close. You all right?"
she asks, with a small amount of concern. I nod, barely managing to remain upright.
"How? What?"
My confusion was palpable, and it likely drove home the point to Deborah that I truly had no understanding of this place.
"Fields,"
she says.
"Just some invisible wires from the other side. Now I wouldn't go asking why, because that's the point of this whole damn place, to figure it all out."
Her cadence was matched by a confident tone.
"So, if I walk into something I cannot see, nor had any hope of seeing beforehand, I can just die?"
She nods, and I continue.
"What are these things? Are they the point of this facility?"
She shakes her head, "No."
"It's way more than just the fields we're trying to understand."
She then peers at the field ahead of us.
"They move little by little. In an hour, it'll likely be in the wall and out of the way."
Taking the lead, she looks around, eventually finding some clues as to our whereabouts before pointing out one sign in particular.
"Cafeteria,"
she looks at me.
Let's get some food.
Two doors of shiny steel block the path. The light fixtures above are still functional. Approaching the doors gave me a sense of unease, and I wasn't feeling comfortable in this endeavor.
Hold up. Something's fishy,
I said while halting her. To my surprise, she was already gripping her weapon and shot me a look of bewilderment.
Don't walk in front of me. Safety's off,
she informs me. I jolt slightly and moved to the side, allowing her to take the lead. Our suspicions were caused by the surrounding walls. While the door remained untouched and perfectly clean, there was an ooze that dribbled along its frame. This ooze was spattered across the concrete, an immense accumulation of which was on the floor and growing. A faint crimson swirled in its gelatinous form, with a backdrop of brownish decay and speckles of black sloshing in its surface. Some of it was still flowing down the wall. Whatever the liquid is, it's peeling the white paint off the face of the concrete, turning it into flakes of blackish crude that clung to the ooze. As we slowly approached the door, a noise rang out from behind it, a whispering voice, one of caution and worry.
Are you all right?
It asks sweetly.
Come here.
It calls. Deborah peers at me, evidently concerned. In response to the voice, we began gradually backing away.
What shall we do?
I ask Deb.
What do you think we should do?
She snaps back.
I'm not a part of containment. I don't deal with this kind of shit.
We sat there in silence for a few tense moments, hearing that voice coming from the door.
It's safe in here. Aren't you hungry? Where are you going?
Soon, the voice is joined by the sounds of a shifting, oozing gurgle. The mass lurches across the floor, beginning to approach us. Deborah brings up an important point.
You know, there's likely hundreds of vending machines around this place. We probably don't need to go in there to get food.
I agree, and we unanimously decide against the cafeteria. We left the hallway leading to it, accompanied by the sounds of those metal doors straining, as if something on the other side began to press against it. Deb said there was still one more path we could take. Once again, at the crossroads, there were four ways to go. One which we came from, one which leads to the cafeteria, one which is blocked by the field, and the last one being our only current hope.
Warning, signal interruption detected. Signal connection restored.
The walk was quiet. No lights on this side of the block, and evidence of absolute mayhem littered the path ahead. As we continued, Deb stops me suddenly, looking at an empty wall. She approaches this and knocks twice. The wall attempts to open up, unveiling one of the secret passages known only to security. But it got jammed partway. Its opening was nowhere near enough room for us to slip inside, but it did allow us to peek in. Deb did so first, very quickly snapping her attention away while saying,
"Let's move."
When I peered inside, I could understand her haste. A massacre had happened. From my angle, it was impossible to count the bodies. There were so many limbs in so many places that you couldn't tell one from another. Without light, the only barely visible section of the room was the ceiling, the only part that wasn't painted in blood. I gazed for a lot longer than was necessary, stuck in horror, wasting my flashlight's battery on a place I couldn't even go, and certainly didn't want to. Moments later, Deborah heard me sprinting to catch up with her, suddenly startled and wanting to leave the hallway.
"What happened?"
she asks.
"You look like you've seen a ghost."
I hand wave it away, not wanting to voice what I thought I'd seen. Within the piles of mutilated security guards, just behind the mess in that passage, a sequence of 5 claws had slowly moved to grip the corner I was looking at. I darted away once I saw what looked like eyes here around that corner. We open a set of doors and walk through a very straight segment of the block. Beyond one door, we could see something that returned my thoughts to my grumbling stomach. At the end of a few more open doorways sat a vending machine, still stocked to the brim, illuminated by a lone, dim light bulb. Before I could begin running towards it, Deb stops me.
"That's the most obvious trap I've ever seen,"
she says. Feeling the hunger, I still continued towards it, slowing only slightly. Deborah protests.
"Hey, Devin, get your ass back here!"
A part of me was on autopilot. My legs moved forward. Something as simple as a candy bar was enough to enthrall me, and I barely noticed her grabbing at my arms, trying to halt me. This back and forth continued until we were one doorway away from the vending machine, where Deborah tackled me and pinned me to the floor.
"Do I need to use handcuffs?"
she asks.
"Do I? What's gotten into you?"
Her rhetorical question didn't bother me. My eyes were still transfixed on the snacks that lie behind that singular, thin glass panel.
"It's a trap,"
she says.
"Don't fucking go for it."
Despite her tremendous effort, I barely managed to wiggle my way to freedom, and like a sheep, I gladly sprinted towards my prize. To her absolute astonishment, it was real. The vending machine whirred as I slammed my shoulder into it. Like a madman, I searched for any way of getting inside, throwing things at the glass to make it break. As I got closer to smashing its surface, Deb walked up to the damaged face and kicked it in. We grabbed everything we could, and we searched for somewhere to sit and eat. A nearby security booth became our temporary sanctuary. The small room had 2 entrances and an unbothered window to peer out of at the rest of the hall. One of us would sit in the chair and keep watch while the other chowed down. As I finally received some nourishment, my mind came back to me. So too did the memories of all that I've witnessed.
"Why was I brought here?"
I asked, plainly.
"Dunno. Don't have your file, so I can't say anything about you,"
Deb answers.
"For all I know, your name isn't even Devin Mildebrandt."
I cast my eyes away from her, hoping to evade suspicion.
"You deal with prisoners?"
"Yeah. Some of them are criminals, others are volunteers. Some had the choice of death row or this shit."
Her face turns towards mine.
"What'd you do to get in here?"
I didn't answer at first, but when pressed, I conceded.
"I saw something related to some mysterious shell corporation that I was investigating that was involved in various criminal actions,"
I confess.
"I had no idea what I was getting into. I thought it was just another billion-dollar Fortune 500 that was dumping toxic waste or some sort of environmental crime."
"A reporter? Journalist?"
Deb probed.
"Yeah, an investigative journalist,"
I say.
"I found a shed on one of their properties that housed some strange chemicals and machines. Almost immediately after, I had a sense that I was being watched and followed. Maybe a month later, while I was preparing to drop the story, I was taken."
I became lost in thought, thinking how minimal my actions were to receive such a tremendous punishment.
Sounds like you probably found a stash of mutagen. Maybe some containment equipment too.
Deb says plainly. Her words had a strangely relieving effect on me, and I didn't even need to ask before she shared more.
They store mutagen in two ways, dry and liquid. Liquid mutagen has stronger effects, but doesn't last as long. Dry mutagen needs to be revived, but will keep forever. It got its name because of how it interacts with humans. The machines I can only guess at. We use so many different ones just around here that engineering is usually driven insane with maintenance. We got swishers for activating mutagen. We got collectors for extracting substances from whatever we need it from. We got injectors, enforcers, conduits, the list goes on.
What's mutagen?
I ask, the journalist in me trying to feed its thirst for the details.
Just some compound that causes growth in humans who come into contact with it. It's something else entirely. Its name is based on its effect, because we genuinely know nothing about it. It's just one of many unknown substances this facility was currently researching.
Deb says.
You seem suddenly ready to answer my questions.
I observe.
Well, when you don't know about your chances of surviving and have barely managed to survive alongside another person, maybe you start to change your view on things.
She says.
Especially towards that person you've survived with.
Our momentary peace continued for a while, thankfully, brought about by the security this booth ironically provided us. Instead of rest or sleep, we opted to return to the hallway blocked by the field and see if it had moved away. Thanks to the food, our energy levels had risen drastically, and we found ourselves talking and bantering a bit more. As we walked back through the halls, I got in front and stopped Deb suddenly. My eyes were glaring ahead, and I silently whispered,
"It could be anywhere."
After which, I received a firm smack from Deb.
"But it could be a trap."
I laughed as we moved ahead. These moments were like breaths of fresh air, a break in the tension. Once back at the hallway where we found the field, she had me stop and crouch down.
"If you listen, you can just barely hear it,"
she instructs. I remain quiet, and to my surprise, she's right. A faint buzzing, like broken lights, slowly emanated from behind a concrete wall. Deb grabs a nearby paper cup and underhand throws it into the field. Sadly, we could see the distortion that surrounded the cup as it fell. And instead of hitting the ground, the cup gently flew back at us.
"Shit, it's still there,"
she sighs.
"What do we do?"
I ask.
"If we can find a way through, then we'll be just fine. Past that door are the sections of the facility that aren't suspended, so no risk of going down with the ship,"
Deb informs. The two of us glare at the field, trying to think of a solution. Finally, Deb thought of something.
"If we can find someone who was in containment, we might be able to find a shuffler array. It's a little box that distorts these fields enough to where we can pass through safely. But where will we find someone from containment?"
I ask who exactly we're looking for.
"Yellow rubber hazmat suit, glass face with filters, and a bright yellow backpack. In the backpack should be the shuffler array,"
she says. We doubled back, checking the halls leading back to the booth and the surrounding rooms. No yellow suits, only a handful of bodies here. We check the way we came, realizing very quickly that it leads nowhere. This left us with one option: check the cafeteria and pray to God that a member of containment just so happened to be there, dead or alive. In the heat of this conundrum, Deborah seemed to be losing her patience. As the list of options narrowed down, her worries became more palpable. Her gusto and can-do attitude had dwindled more than a bit. likely due to exhaustion and the growing hopelessness of the situation. We continued to check every nook and cranny we could. But unless the field moves, we'll have to check the cafeteria. Instead of risking everything immediately, we choose to wait things out a bit, with enough snacks to last for another day or two. Deb thinks it's quite likely that by tomorrow, it'll move. However, that requires us to sit around in the security booth, hoping that none of the growing number of threats come this way. In a moment of frustration, Deborah decides we need to check the cafeteria, saying,
"If we don't go in and deal with whatever is in there, it'll likely leave the cafeteria and come deal with us instead."
I reluctantly agreed, having had the thought myself as we sat essentially cornered by the field. So we made our way back to the disgusting hallway. The face of these doors was still perfectly clean, and somehow the mess surrounding it had increased during our absence. Deborah readied herself and approached the door, but I stopped her.
"Let me go first,"
I demanded.
"Why?"
Deb asks.
"If you die, we both die. But you still have a chance if I go first,"
I say rather matter-of-factly. While a portion of me felt like I was being courageous and brave, another part of me approached those doors with every expectation of dying the moment they opened. Anticlimactically, the doors opened to darkness and quiet, other than the sound of my thudding heart. In a moment, Deborah and I had flashlights piercing into the room. The floor was covered in that gooey substance, inches of it. Indistinct whispers came from somewhere in the dark. The walls and tables all looked slick and oily. My first two steps into the room confirmed that it was very much like an ice rink in there, and an obscenely foul odor stormed out in a fumigating puff of air. Something in the dark lurches, but my flashlight can't find it. I look at every corner, knowing it's somewhere, but I cannot spot it. Then, a miracle.
Hey, Deb, I found one.
I cried out while gingerly approaching something on the floor.
What is it?
She asks from the entrance.
It's the shuffler, I think. A containment guy died right here,
I say.
Oh, that's just great. Now grab it so we can...
Before being cut off by a loud crash, I turn to see a gelatinous blob hanging on the roof above the entrance. Its body stretched downwards. The weight of it cracked the concrete flooring and encapsulated a now limp Deb. Her body was being gently pushed and pulled within its gelatinous form. Not a single motion from her, the initial crush possibly having killed her. As seconds passed, I watched her body swiftly erode. The skin melted first. Then it began eroding away at her muscle fibers. Before the shock could fully set in, I snatched the backpack from the yellow-clad corpse and turned my attention back to the blob. It began to move towards me very slowly, retaining its mass while stretching across the floor, turning into a death puddle. Reactively, I sprinted around it, watching its edges grow to try and reach me. Within the minuscule puddle were bubbling bones, dissolving as I watched. Once back through the doors, I slammed them shut. I run down the hall in panic, instinctively saying something, only to realize that Deb was no longer with me. Back at the crossroads, I threw the cup back at the field and received it once more. I grabbed the backpack and opened it up, snatching what looked to be a tape recorder. Having no idea how it functions, I started pressing buttons until eventually it clicked on and began producing an awful noise. The moment it began shrieking, I tossed it into the field. At first, nothing seemed to happen. But as time passed, more distortion appeared. The buzzing turned into growling that became louder and louder, all until it stopped. The distortion vanished. The shuffler fell to the floor, and presumably, I could safely pass through. As I inched my way into where the field was, with my eyes squeezed shut, imagining the incoming pain and death, nothing happened. I opened them and began walking. As I got to the next section, it all began to hit me. I was getting clammy, shaky. Tears welled in my eyes, and I was hyperventilating. This culminated in me as I found a nice spot where I sat balled up in the corner and began to cry, all too sure of my impending and horrible death.
RBP 1605, colloquially known as the Blob, is an amorphous entity of unknown origin and composition. Initial containment proved challenging, as the entity secretes a highly corrosive acid that rapidly degrades organic matter and certain metals. Research into the precise nature of this acid remained ongoing, as its properties defy conventional scientific understanding. The Blob displays a rudimentary form of predatory behavior, actively seeking out and consuming living organisms. The digestion process is particularly gruesome, as the entity's acidic secretions break down its prey into a viscous, nutrient-rich slurry, which it then absorbs. Disturbingly, the Blob has exhibited a preference for human victims. Containment procedures. RBP-1605 is to be held in a sealed, reinforced chamber lined with a proprietary polymer resistant to its corrosive secretions. Under no circumstances should personnel come into direct contact with the entity. Failure to adhere to containment protocols will result in immediate termination. The concrete maze now crushes beneath its own weight, likely complicating any passage that would have been useful. During all this, the benevolent Bureau has its media puppets parroting lies that the surrounding region is being struck by completely natural tremors, all the while sending in floods of units to watch and maintain control of the area. Within their higher management, a fire rages, blame is passed around, and arguments of costs for repair, cover-up, and conclusion are abuzz. They squabble over these things while prisoners are crushed and anomalies begin to pour out. Now grappling with loss and the gradual destruction of the complex, making most escape impossible, Devin must find his way while lost in an evolving maze filling with horrors. Outside, a storm brews overhead, possibly a result of this mess. Raindrops obstruct the vision of Bureau agents as they seek escaped denizens of the doldrums. Thunder and lightning strike above as water begins to seep into the facility, the lower sections remaining temporarily ignorant. Perhaps a flood can wash these ungodly creatures and objects away. As the storm rages above and the floodwaters rise below, the fate of the protagonist hangs in the balance. The doldrums have become a crucible in which Devin's resolve will be tested, and the outcome of this incident will determine not only his fate, but the fate of countless others. The anomalies contained within the doldrums, now unleashed from containment and desperate, pose an ever-present threat to humanity, but more immediately to those trapped within the collapsing doldrums. The Bureau, too, will stop at nothing to protect its secrets, even if it means burying the truth along with the bodies of anyone in its way.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.